I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're talking Tuckin on 870 The Flyway.
We're in the blind now, loading our guns and scanning the sky for the first flock of ducks to appear.
I was 27 years old. I didn't even own a pair of hip boots.
All later.
There's a flock now. Looks like about $25.
What kind of gun did you use?
Freaking 12 gauge. What do you think?
You're listening to 870 The Flyway, your duck and goose hunting podcast.
Memberships in the Canvasback Duck Club.
Canvasback? When I was a fighter, that's what they called me. I was on the canvas so much, I used to stand like that. Not for long.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Ordinarily, we're going to open up on ducks that are all of a half mile away.
Do you have any idea when the last time somebody won the world with a wooden duck hole?
This guy was good.
They're hovering over the decoys. Okay, let him have.
Did you shoot any?
Yes, like 50 of them.
Three ducks hit the water with a resounding splash.
On 870, The Flyway.
It's a beautiful duck smiling at me.
On today's episode, it's Wood Ducks by the Boxful with Jeff Balse of the Wisconsin DNR Horicon Nature Center at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm Jeff Balse. I live in south central Wisconsin. I've been delving into wood ducks for probably about 28 years. I have about 100 boxes of my own that I maintain.
Wow.
And probably another 60 to 70 that I help maintain around the Horicon Marsh wildlife area. Wood ducks kind of entertain me about 10 months out of the year, whether I'm hunting in the fall, taking care of nest boxes in the winter, and then in the spring, watching them come back, and then up to early summer when I photograph some of the jumps, the duckling jumps out of nest boxes.
Wow. Well, you really are involved with them basically the whole year round. Where did that come from? Is that a lifelong sort of thing? Or
I grew up, I think my first passion was probably duck hunting, and then, you know, as a kid, you know, you learn, you know, duck hunt in the fall, and then in the springtime, you know, oh, the ducks are coming back, and you go out and watch them. They're all, you know, beautiful colored plumages. And then you start to notice other birds around, and next thing you know, it, you know, keeps evolving. And, my dad always said, you know, if you're going to be a hunter and take, that you must also give back.
Yeah.
So that's when I, you know, it was always kind of my passion, but, you know, I make sure that, you know, the resources is going to be there for the next generation. And, I mean, it, you know, goes with a lifelong learning, you know,
all those
things, you know, with every answer I get, I have another 10 questions.
Cool.
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, just keeps on snowballing. So
excellent. And just so I understand it, in my mind, the you work there at the Horicon Center, is that right?
Yes, I work there part time. I'm a wildlife tech there, trails and grounds, and work with the wildlife conservation education department there, supporting them.
Yeah, just had a successful round of education Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we do a nest box seminar every year. So we always cover wood ducks and bluebirds, because that's the two most common, you know, cavity nesters that people want to, you know, help out. You know, common questions. And then we always kind of throw in something else that, you know, would help, you know, whether it's native landscaping. We've done, you know, some other birds in the past, military warblers. We've done bats. We've done, you know, so we always kind of throw something else in the mix, just kind of keep people interested and you know, just kind of spread the word on wildlife education.
Cool. Was this for young people only, or?
No, this is for anybody that's wants to learn. And we get some young people, you know, parents bring their kids, but we get a lot of a lot of first-time homeowners. We get a lot of people that, you know, have some property somewheres. They want to, what can we do to enhance, you know? We've seen wood ducks. We've seen bluebirds in the area. What can we do to attract them? And what can we, do to help the populations?
Cool. I've got a question about that. What can the people do to attract wood ducks to their yard, okay, or their lawn or their property?
Well, so first off, I always say,
do you have to have a water source, first of all?
Well, you don't have to have. As long as you're within probably a mile and a half to 2 miles, they will nest that far away from water.
Say that again. A mile and a half?
Mile and a half to 2 miles away.
Wow.
So you kind of have to understand that we're, you know, that stage in their life where they're nesting and then where they're going to raise their young is two different things. So they, you know, to raise their young, they have to nest first. You know, that's, you know, without ducklings, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, what's going on. So they have to produce the young. And from there, they take them down to water, and that brood habitat where they're raised, it can be close by, literally, you know, right out of the box, or it can be, like I said, you know, a mile or more away.
Wow. Amazing. And that old hen leads those babies through the big bad world to what they hope is safety then.
Yes.
What are the criteria for the brood habitat, Jeff?
So they have to have, usually for wood ducks, it's overhead cover, you know, some brushy wetland. They don't like it to be exposed all that much, but for that brood habitat, the insects are the key. So, you know, they feed exclusively on insects for about the first 7 to 10 days of the duckling's life. So those macroinvertebrates, flies, mosquito larvae, all that kind of stuff, you know, a good, healthy quality wetland, you know, there's no substitute for that. We can put up boxes, we can raise those, but without that good quality wetland, you know, it doesn't sustain itself.
Guys and gals, you don't even have to be a duck hunter or even know where Minnesota is on a map to enjoy Minnesota Duck Camps, 160 years of history and tradition book by Steve Knutson. 750 hardbound pages, more than 250 duck camps featured, 700 photos, including vintage, present day, and aerial stories from the 1800s to the early 1900s. Folks, this is not just about sticks and stones. It's the people that make these duck camps happen. Great stories. Minnesota Duck Camps by Steve Knutson. Order yours today. Look for the ad in Duck Hunting Traditions magazine. Let's talk about the box itself. You said at the top of the show that they're cavity nesters, and that I'm sure everybody understands what that is, that, you know, a hole in a tree or whatever. But these boxes are made to simulate the tree with a hole in it or the cavity. What do they need to have as far as that goes, Jeff?
Yeah. So it's a box, you know, the dimensions itself aren't so much hard square, it can be 8x10, 8x12, you know, approximately. But the only real hard and fast rule for the dimensions of the box is that opening. Opening that's going to be four inches wide and 3 inches high. So that kind of replicates like what a busted off branch would be or a hollow tree. And that was kind of came out early in wood duck research. Mm-hmm. So back in the 1930s, it was thought that the wood duck could possibly go extinct. So right. There were some folks that, doing some research. So they went and and found some natural cavities, did some measurements, you know, how big was the openings, how deep, how wide, and all that stuff. And they came up with, well, can we replicate these, mm-hmm. and will the ducks use them? And fortunately for the wood ducks, they do.
Okay. So, we see the wood, they're kind of a classic shape. I mean, it's the, you know, the longer, it's like a deep box with a little roof on it, and then maybe the oval hole there, a 4x3. But sometimes you see the nest boxes that are made out of metal, you know, sheet metal or whatever. What about that?
They can work. You have to be real careful about that. Up in the upper Midwest, it's probably not quite the issue it would be, kind of like in your neck of the woods, you know, the states, south, those are really hot. And, you know, with wood, because it breathes better. I mean, they can and they do work, but gotta be kind of careful, especially don't put them out in the sun.
Okay.
If you have them in the shade somewhere, you know, where they're always shaded, you probably get away with it. I know we have some wood is definitely preferred because it breathes well, it insulates well, you know, it shields from heat and cold.
Alrighty. Okay. And now is there any, there's got to be some criteria or best practices for where you locate the wood duck box, are there not?
Yes, definitely. So
tell us about those.
Wood, I always use a formula where wood meets water, you know, that kind of equal a wood duck. So if you have a riparian stream, if you have a lake, you know, you got to have some type of wood nearby, you know, around the woods. It's, you know, a lot of willows, some river birch, cottonwoods, you know. I'm sure you get, you know, different trees down in your neck of the woods, but put them up. And when we say put them up, we put them on poles with a predator guard. So we put them on poles. You know, originally they were put on trees. Yes, the ducks will use them, but you will also attract and get things that you don't want in the box, namely raccoons and or competition from squirrels and a whole bunch of other things. So if you're going to put them up, put them on a pole, put it with either a cone-shaped predator guard or a length of PVC pipe that's underneath them, 4-inch in diameter and about 30 inches long, one bolt right underneath the box so that wobbles. So it kind of, if a raccoon would try to climb up there, he's got nothing real solid to hold on to. So that's one easy way. And keep it away from any overhanging trees where squirrels can drop on them. And then the last thing, and probably the most important, you have to have a clear flight path for that hand wood duck to come and go as quietly and secretively as possible, because everything on the outside of that box wants to eat what's inside that box.
That's right. Wow. So, all right.
So, yeah, a pole, and don't, you know, I've been kind of preaching edge of the forest openings. You know, they can be inside a forest, but you still got to have that clear flight path. In areas where you get marshlands and that, where you get a lot of willows, make sure those willows are clear. Make sure they're away from those little trap stake willows that, you know, kind of grow up out of nowhere all the time.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. And then when you put up your box, make sure you have some shavings, about 3 to 4 inches worth of shavings inside that box. Kind of replicate a natural cavity.
Very cool. Very cool. Here's the $64,000 question. It's now the sixth day of March. Is it, and remember, we're talking to people from south to north and east to west here in North America. Is it too late to put up a wood duck box and expect a wood duck hen to find it, use it, be interested in it, Jeff?
So it is never too late. You weren't going to put that box up for 1 year, were you? No, you're going to put it up over a period of time. I look at it as a approximately a 10-year investment on your time and your efforts for over there.
Say that again.
I'd look at it about like a 10-year investment, you know, for that box. You know, about the lifespan of a box is about approximately 10 years, some more, some less, you know. You know, and the key to being successful is monitoring those boxes. Putting them up is one thing, but to me, the fun and enjoyment and education part is monitoring these things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing what you find in these boxes. These cavities are so critical. We get wood ducks, hooded mergansers. We also get screech owls, great crested flycatcher, bluebirds, tree swallows. Just the whole gamut of things that we find in them. So
well, now is that necessarily a bad thing? I mean, will the wood duck coexist with those any of those other critters or not?
Oh yeah. So the timing. So I've had as many as three different hatches of three different species in a single box in a year.
Really?
So for here we get the hooded mergansers. They're about a week to 10 days earlier than what wood ducks are.
All right.
And typically I get my first wood duck egg about April 1st here. And then from there all the way to almost end of May, you know, it could happen. So you may so you get a wood hooded merganser first. She will raise her clutch. She's out by the middle of May. You can get a wood duck coming right back in after, literally within days of when that hooded merganser hatch. You can get a wood duck to come in there. So she's out by, you know, the end of June. And then I'll get a tree swallow or a house wren or something like that that comes in afterwards.
How about that? Now, you mentioned monitoring the nest boxes. Tell me the difference, or tell us the difference, the listeners and I, what the difference is between monitoring and being too obtrusive and being too much on the scene for the duck to like.
Okay, so when I say monitoring, if you have your box where you can get at it, I just monitor it with my cell phone. So you just take your cell phone, you stick it in the hole, take a picture, you take a look at it, like, oh, okay, yeah, she's in there, excellent. Clever. Yep, Clever. Be on your way. Huh. And if she's not in there, then you're free to open up the box, take a look at what's in there. You know, maybe have two eggs, maybe 10 eggs, you know. So it's, you know, that way you're not disturbing the hen. And generally I do that in the afternoons because there's a little less going on. First, they generally lay eggs in the morning, so you're not disturbing that. So typically when I come home from the work, you know, 5-6 o'clock at night, I'll wander through my yard and, you know, see what kind of wood duck drama has happened for the last, 24 hours. And, So it's easy. And then you have, you have a record right there. Okay. The hen was on the nest and you can go and record that. I record all my boxes in a program called nestwatch.org. It's, Cornell Labs of Ornithology. So that way you can keep track of your boxes. Scientists across the world will be able to have access to the data over a period of time. You know, they can say, 2008 was a great year for, wood ducks in the upper Midwest not a good year in, the Southeast, and they can kind of put these together, what was happening, what was going on. And it helps you keep track of good boxes and dud boxes. Box number 25 hasn't had anything in the last 5 years. What am I doing messing with this? Yeah, let's move it. Yeah, let's get it to a productive area.
Okay. So is there any such thing? I mean, is there anything that a person or people can do to help the hen along as far as with the eggs? I'm My sense is not, but is there anything in your experience?
No, just, you know, provide a good area, good habitat.
Okay.
Yeah, once the hen lays an egg and she starts incubating, that's, you're on her time frame. You know, keep any disturbances, you know. And it's amazing. I've got boxes that, you know, are 15 feet from my kitchen window.
Yeah.
You know, what they will tolerate. So, you know.
Wow. That's awesome. Tell us, and I'm just enough of a fan of what you're doing that I know the term dump nest. Tell us about that. What's the deal there? Because we've actually seen that in our wood duck nests before. Seems like they dump in them and they're gone. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's kind of a phenomenon that we're still kind of understanding, but yet have a few key things that we've learned. So out in California, they captured a bunch of hens on nests or in nest boxes. They put pick tags on them and then put pick tags, readers around about, I don't know, a couple dozen boxes. Hmm. So they learned that we used to think that, okay, one hen goes in a box, lays an egg a day, you know, 12 to 16 eggs and that's it.
Yeah.
But it was learned that every box within that study had multiple hens that entered and laid eggs in that box.
Huh.
As many from two to as many as seven different hens go in those boxes.
Gee.
So I think it's actually the norm rather than the exception.
Huh.
And where you get these multiple hens and these dump nests, it's probably the first time nesters where they don't quite they lay an egg but they don't know quite how to hatch them or where to hatch and how that whole thing, the incubation things, you know, they aren't comfortable with that.
All right.
So you know, it's almost like a learned behavior they would learn from like their mothers. Okay, this is a good box, this is a good area, this is, you know, a safe area.
Wow.
So yeah, it's interesting. I wish I could have the key to that, because you know it happens to myself as well, and just about everybody I know that puts up boxes.
Okay.
So that's where I'm kind of an advocate for putting boxes in a little more secluded areas, not quite out in the open. Say like if you were going to a marsh and putting out, you know, 25 boxes, kind of keeping, I always said, you know, 100 yards apart or out of sight of one another.
Mm-hmm.
So that I'm leaning towards a little more of out of sight of one another. So
I see.
Not quite so easy. You know, these young hens that are like, oh, I'm laying an egg, but what, I don't know what to do with it. Oh, there's a box right over there, you know?
Okay.
And everybody just kind of, you know, puts them in one there.
Fantastic. Well, folks get a chance to put up a nesting box, and they've got a hen or hens, as it turns out, keeping some eggs warm in there. And then the big day comes, and those ducklings are going to jump out into the big bad world. And you told me off the camera earlier that that's one of your big moments that you strive to capture. How do you know when to get out there and watch for those ducklings to leap?
So that's where your monitoring is key. So if you're monitoring, doing a digital, diligently monitoring those boxes, so you kind of know when the first egg is laid, you know kind of when she is initiated incubation. So it's going to be about 30 days when she starts incubating after that. So at about 25 days, I will continuously monitor those every day until you get to the day that you start to see the eggs start to pip. And that's, you know, it'll be a cracked egg, but it's cracking from the inside out. So it's kind of cool. And they actually start communicating back and forth. The duckling inside that egg and that hen will communicate back and forth.
Amazing. Now that's called, what was it called again?
Pipping.
All right.
Yeah. So the hatching process takes about 24 hours. And then again, it takes about 24 to 36 hours for they're all dried off and ready to jump. And then that's when it comes to the day of the jump. That's where it's out of my hands. You know, it's I can tell you when, but it's all up to that hen. So I usually set up a blind or a turkey tent, or, you know, sometimes it's right from my house. And, you know, you sit on a bucket until your legs go numb waiting. But generally, it's I think it has to do with something, at least my experience, where the dew is off of the grass. And it kind of makes sense that the ducklings aren't going to get wet right away because they can't thermoregulate yet.
Right.
So it's kind of, unless it's right at water's edge, and then they just kind of plunk in, you know. So generally, you know, mid morning. So so I, you know, you sit there and you watch and patient and watch the hen. Sometimes, a lot of times, she'll go out, kind of fly the route, do her reconnaissance, and then she'll come back in the box, you know, and then, you know, peek out of the hole and look and look and look and And when she decides it's time, she'll come out of the box, land right down at the base of the box, and start a real chittering type call. And then they're constant communication then. So the young are peeping, you know, beep, 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 beep. And she can hear that back and forth, and she's chittering, and she encourages them to come out. And she's listening, and then once there's no more sound coming from the box, that means they're all done. And she will lead them to leading them to water their you know, brood habitat.
Wow. Now, this is one of those questions that I have a hunch I know the answer to, but I'm going to ask anyway. The baby ducklings and the mama wood duck don't need any help from us getting to the water.
Correct.
Or do they?
No. Okay. So she knows where the water is. She knows where she wants to take them. And generally, she's going to take them to the first available cover. And that may not be towards, you know, the creek or the area.
She's so they're not lost.
The first cover. Yeah. Yep. So she's going to take them to that first cover, and then she may do a, you know, it's like a circle route to get down there. She knows the way to take them. She knows the safe route, you know.
Okay. So they're not lost if they do that.
Correct.
Yeah. See,
correct.
That's where I think a lot of people that have witnessed that, it's like they go over and try to grab them and put them. No, go this way. That's the, you know, I mean, Great. What else do we need to know about wood ducks and wood duck boxes at this point, Jeff? This is fascinating stuff. Great.
Oh, yeah. like I said, clear flight path, you know, monitor, you know, and enjoy the process. You know, if you do get lucky enough where you have some be able to see a jump, you know, invite some neighbors or friends or whatever it is, you know, enjoy that process. And then, you know, it's a special. So you wait months for them to come back, and then, you know, another month for them to lay eggs and incubate, and then days before they, you know, finally make an appearance. And then that jump can be over in, you know, literally minutes.
Yeah.
I've had a friend of mine has had, you know, with the digital cameras now, he's had 12 ducklings jump in 52 seconds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it's over and it's done. And then she leads him off and, so it's a really special part of nature, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And something that so few people have really witnessed. I mean, especially live, that's great. And with 100 boxes around your place and access to more, I've got to ask the question, do the wood ducks, whenever they get to be fledglings and learn to fly, do they come back to that wood duck box area and hang around and swoop and fly? And or is that, are they done with that aspect of their life?
They're done. So the male wood ducks will never return to a box in their life.
Okay.
The hens only will come back to that box the following spring when they're starting to nest. Okay. So they go directly to a wetland. They need to feed. They need insects. They need vegetation. They need, you know, cover to hide. And uh-huh. that's where they it's about 60 to 70 days until they gain flight. And then from there, you know, it's, you know, once they gain flight, it's continent wide pretty much, you know, wherever they can end up. But a lot of our wood ducks in the upper Midwest end up to be Arkansas, you know, Gulf Coast areas is kind of where they winter.
Really? Right down the Mississippi River then?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating. And we've got the 2-minute warning from the engineer. In the last 2 minutes, we need to tell folks, or you need to, and I'll listen, how they can get plans for a good wood duck box that's going to work, not something that's maybe. And then also tell us a little bit about the organization, if you can. The Wood Duck Society, is that the name of it?
Yes. Yep. Okay. That's so you can go on the Wood Duck Society webpage and go on there. We have what we call the best practices. There's also some plans on there. So I would, you know, peruse that. Okay. And we have frequently asked questions, and that will, you kind of read through those, and it'll really take about 90% of the questions that you may have and answered right there.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Wow. Well, I've got to say that we're under a minute here. We're going to get cut off. I don't want that to happen before I say, Jeff, thank you for this outstanding segment. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. Can't beat it. 100 wood duck boxes in your yard, and you've done this for years. You're the Shell Answer Man of wood ducks, and we appreciate you being on 870 The Flyway, and we will remember you well long after the show is over, but good luck with it, and we owe you a debt, because I know a lot of people are going to hear this and going to put up a box, and you know every box helps something, right? I mean, if they do it right.
Right. Right.
All righty. So. All righty. Well, we bid you a good day, and thanks for being with us again on 870 The Flyway.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha.